Call to order this regular assembly meeting of the city and borough of Granville on December 9th, 2014 at 7 p.m. This evening, the pledge of allegiance will be given by, will be led by Assemblymember Julie Decker, after which if you remain standing for the invocation to be given by Donald Carnegie.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Let us pray. Lord, watch over the city and borough of Granville and those whom we have chosen to govern us. Keep them steadfast in the resolve, mindful of the past, and always looking to the future. May their decisions create a better future for all of us. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
Thank you. Well, it's good to see everybody survive midnight madness. Hope you had fun. We have one certificate of service this evening. That's a certificate of service. The city and borough of Granville, Alaska presents a certificate of service to Grover Mathis for his service and dedication as a member of the Parks and Recreation Board from February 1998 to October 2014. Mr. Grover isn't in attendance. We probably see that this is
16 years.
Yeah, wow.
Thank you.
That's pretty impressive.
Roll call, please.
Assemblymembers Blake.
Here.
Prasanka.
Here.
Rooney.
Here.
Decker.
Here.
Kloski.
Here.
Mitchell. And Mayor Jack.
Here. Amendments to the agenda. Are there any amendments? Consent agenda. A conflict of interest. All right. Anyone has a conflict of interest? Then we'll go to the consent agenda.
I make a motion to approve items 6A, 7A, 7B, 7C, 7D, 7E, and 7F on a consent agenda.
Second.
Been moved in second. Any discussion? Roll call, please.
Assemblymembers McCloskey.
Yes.
Blake.
Yes.
Rooney.
Yes.
Decker.
Yes.
And Mayor Jack.
Yes. Item 8, Borough Manager's Report.
I'd like to go ahead and defer to Marla Sanger and to do the hospital report first.
Thank you. I'm Marla Sanger, Granville, Alaska, and I will get us started, but then I'm going to turn it over to Olinda White, who is serving as a consultant to the hospital right now, helping us with our finances since we've lost our CFO in September. I do want to acknowledge Olinda and express appreciation for her stepping back in to assist us. She is very well respected and highly regarded as for her past performance as the CFO at Wrangell Medical Center by both our cost report preparer, Marty Michaels, and Eric Campbell, partner with BDO, who does our financial audit. And so she has been working closely with both of them as she arrived about the time that we were just getting into our audit preparation period of time, as well as helping us get through the Medicare cost report. And those are the two biggest financial tasks that occur to the hospital in a given year. And I think I'll turn it over to her now, and then if there are questions afterward that she and I may share them, but I'll go ahead and turn it over to her so she can give you a summary of what she has assessed so far that she's been with us.
Thank you.
Olinda White, 113 Mott Dewey Lane. I'll start with the financials. The financial audit was real late this year. It wasn't done until the first week in October. It's usually done the first week in August. that created quite a burden on everyone because they couldn't close the year. They couldn't go and do future statements. They couldn't, you know, run the financials until the auditors got done so that they could make sure they could get all the reports they needed and everything they needed. Another thing that makes it hard is the financial audit has to be completed. You have to have the final from the auditors to go with the cost report, and the cost report is due November 30th. So if you have such a short amount of time to get it done, you have to push through with all of it real fast to get to that point, because Medicare does not allow extensions for any reason for the cost report anymore. They said, well, maybe if there was a fire or something and everything was destroyed, but otherwise there's no extensions on the cost report. One of the things the auditors came up with is they wanted us to go through the construction in progress account for the new hospital and look at all of the expenses that had been paid and determine if those expenses would move forward with the new facility or if they were so old that we would have to look at new. And they felt that we needed to expense all of those or get them on the statement for anything that couldn't be moved forward. So the first thing we did is we went through all the expenses and looked at the invoices and everything. And basically the stuff we kept was equipment that could be moved and all of the site work that's still usable. You know, the permitting and all the stuff that they did. So that meant that $3,558,844 would be written off on the financials below the operations line as impairment to hospital construction progress. So we knew that that was going to hit very hard. The other thing that they wanted to change was the allowance for bad debts account. Usually the allowance for bad debt account is bad debts, charity, and contractuals is done at the end of every year by the auditors. We don't do anything during the year to adjust for them or to look at them and try to adjust as we go. We just wait till the end of the year. An attempt had been made during the year to try to adjust every month to what they thought actuals would be. However, they ended up not being correct, and they weren't done every year. So the auditors had to make an additional adjustments to the allowance account of $1,451,000. So that is an additional expense that had never been on the statement. It was based on the accounts receivable and what pocket, I guess I can say, that the receivables were in. They looked at all the Medicare receivables and said your collection ratio is so much, and they did it from the representative of the year and how it had came out through the year. And they did that for Medicare, Medicaid, self-pay, you know, all the way through, and that's how they came up with the $1,451,000. Part of the problem was in fiscal year 13, the receivables had climbed some, but they did not make any adjustments at their year end for fiscal year 2013. So this $1,004,000, I believe, is really an adjustment for 2 years to bring us up to what it should be now. I feel this number may be high, but they felt that it was better to be high and have it all in 1 year along with the construction in progress and to get over it and then move forward. And then if it's really too high, they'll know by next year and they can adjust it back down. So they felt that and I said, okay, we can do that. But they, from now on, they said they would make sure they look at it every year instead of skipping years. Now, if your receivables stay about the same, you don't have to worry about it. And our receivables up till that point had stayed about the same. Right now, the receivables are very high. They're $4 million, and they were $2,324,000, you know, back a couple years ago, and so they have really climbed. Part of this is due to the computer program that the state Medicaid program bought and are using to pay claims, and they can't seem to pay a claim. They do things like we send in our claims and it'll come back, be denied because there wasn't a patient name on it. But yet when it came back, it had the patient name on it telling you who they weren't going to pay for. It had the ID number for the patient that said, you know, the state ID number, but that was a reason. They come up with every reason under the sun why they can't pay.
Can I interrupt you for a moment?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that required under HIPAA that you leave the name off? If not, why?
When you send a claim to be paid, you have to have a name on it, and you have to have an ID number on it for the insurance company, which in this case is Medicaid, or they can't ID them. They're bound by the same HIPAA regulations as hospital employees. Anybody that sees a claim with a name or a diagnosis on it has to withhold the same HIPAA regulations as hospital workers.
I was under the impression that's why they issued an ID number, so that for the confidentiality reasons, there wouldn't be a name.
Yeah. We have, I shouldn't say this. When I was still working there, some of the claims, like for example, that come to the city that are for prisoners in the jail or something like that, we had to start using numbers on them instead of names because they weren't going to an insurance company. Now, I don't know if they're still doing that, but we had done that at one point in time. But if it goes to the insurance company, it has to have the name on it. It's got to have certain things are mandatory. Name, address, birth date, social security number, all those things pretty much have to be on it.
It seems like it defeats the purpose of HIPAA.
That's right. So anyway, Medicaid finally back, you might remember what month, Marla. I don't know when it happened because it was way before my time. In the middle of this year sometime, Medicaid advanced money to the hospital for claims they thought would be paid. And they broke it down from all the different categories because we have to have different billing numbers. So they gave us money for inpatient, money for outpatient, money for long-term care, money for physician bills. But they didn't tie them to any patient. And so then after a period of time, they decided that they had to start being paid back some of that. And so they are taking that money back at so much, you know, one of them, the outpatient, for example, is $1,000. Every time they write a check, they take back $1,000. We still owe them about $138,000 on the advances. But Medicaid, according to the accounts receivable, owes us $568,000, you know, in total. In looking at the receivables, I have been spending quite a bit of time looking at them and going over them and checking and everything. It seems like all insurance types have slowed down, and they're all pretty much double of what they were when I left, or pretty close to it. Whether it be just their process of them trying to keep their money, whether it be Obamacare, any way you want to look at it, they've just slowed down. So the receivables are very high. We need to try to get our receivables back down to $2 million, $2.3 million. A really good place for them to be would be $1.8 million. I don't know whether to think it can even get to that point at this stage of the game, but that's something we have to look at. I have been going through all the receivables, so I'm in the middle of the commercial accounts, so I'm probably two-thirds done going through the insurance type, checking them, making sure they're correct. One of the things I was telling Marla after I got here, some of the other facilities in the state said that they're being paid wrong, that they have a contract like we do with Medicaid, which is a four-year contract, and they determine how much our cost is to operate in each of these different categories, and they give us a contract. And then next year they'll add 2% or 3% for cost of living, and that's what they do every year. It doesn't matter what cost of living is. When they give you the contract, they tell you how much it's going to go up every year. And they said they were being paid incorrectly, and I said, I just find that really hard to believe that they could pay incorrectly when they have this contract written on a piece of paper that says exactly what you're going to be paid. Well, I found some outpatient today that's been paid incorrectly. Instead of paying us 90-some percent on the claim, they paid 100% of the claim. So now it's more of, you know, I'm going to have to stop and think about this and figure out how to go back and how far I have to go back to look at these to see where they went wrong. I don't even at this point know where to think, but because that just came up today. Basically, for our claims to go through the Medicaid computer system, which is, it's the company is Xerox, they have to manually, the Medicaid people have to manually go through each claim and look at it and make sure everything's right, and then they try to push it through the computer system, and when it says there's an error, they try to override to get them to go through. They are having to do that for every hospital in the state. So what we used to get checks from Medicaid weekly, now we get checks from Medicaid every 4 to 6 weeks. We do not get them weekly. And we don't know how long it will take. There's 500 and some errors in the program that they have identified so far. This program was purchased and went into effect October 1 of 13. And it's just been a nightmare. The state has now filed a lawsuit against Xerox to try to alleviate some of the problems. I guess two other states in the union have also filed charges against Xerox for the same thing. We're trying to get all the older claims and the higher value claims processed that Medicaid has denied so that we can get the money through the door. They have not paid, Medicaid has not paid any of the swing bed patients for all of last year. So that's a lot of money sitting out there. Marla's been working with the private pay patients to try to reduce those amounts and to get the people that owe large amounts of money to get them paid, and some of them are coming through. One of the things that happened is we had a long-term care resident that was on Medicaid that in October of 13, the state, Senior Services, who authorizes whether people are on Medicaid or not, kicked this person off Medicaid and said they had too many assets. Their bill is now $250,000. They have no assets, basically. I mean, they have a few, but they don't have enough to pay something like that. And the social worker at the hospital has been trying to work with Senior Services to see, she says, I just want to know why this person was kicked off. And last week we found out that Senior Services made a mistake and this person is going to have Medicaid going clear back to October of last year. And so it'll take a while, but we should get $250 from that. We're in the process of trying to work with all the personnel in billing, you know, every aspect of the billing program, to try to work out a schedule of trying to bring down receivables. And, for example, Laura today said to me, oh, Linda, I have a claim that Medicaid is second. I have billed Medicaid 9 times. To get them to pay the second portion, and they keep denying it for some reason or another. So I'm going to call today and I'm going to ask for a supervisor. And so one of the people that used to help her all the time has now been promoted to supervisor, so she asked for that person, and they guaranteed her that they would put the claim through this time and they would work it and make sure it got through. Now, whether it happens or not, but when you have to send a claim 9 times to try to get it paid, and every time you have to look up the information, the EOB and everything to send with it showing that the other insurance paid, it more than doubles or triples your work that you have to do. you know, so it takes away from the other stuff. So we're going to try to set up some goals to bring those receivables down, hopefully. We are working with another person in medical records to help with the coding so that the stuff gets coded, you know, faster, and so the bill can go out. Right now, to today, I think we had $298,000 worth of bills that have been incurred that have not been coded, whether it be the doctors haven't finished the work, or the documentation isn't there yet, or they haven't had time to do the coding. But that adds to it too. You know, that needs to get remedied and get done. So supposedly we'll have two coders, so hopefully that will go through. Everyone else on the staff is being coached and worked with to try to get them to do better documentation, because if the documentation isn't there the way Medicare and Medicaid and the insurances look at it, if it's not on a piece of paper, if it's not on something that says it was done, and you didn't hit all the points of how it was done, then it was never done. You can't bill for it. So we've been working with the rest of the staff to try to make sure that the documentation is all there and all the points are hit upon so that they can go through. That way the bill can go out faster and hopefully we can bill it once and get paid and not have to keep going through. We also compiled a list for Jeff to go through on equipment that we had purchased during the year that we could put through on the state grant, that things would move that when we go to a new facility. We've been installing or instilling minor cutbacks in the whole facility. All the departments are involved with eliminating labor, eliminating waste, eliminating supplies. Basically, I've told them, if we don't need this to stay open tomorrow, you don't buy it. I don't care if you think we need it down the road, we have to cut back because we've got to get this cash under control and get the finances under control. The only way, since we are paid cost by Medicare and Medicaid, the only way for the hospital to gain any funds or to get ahead of the game is by depreciation. And depreciation isn't very high. We've almost completely depreciated that building. And, you know, with the equipment stuff we have, it's just not enough. If you have a lot of depreciation, your cash flow will go the other direction because you have a higher amount that you're being reimbursed for. That's why when we were working on the new building, it was like by year three or four, cash flow was no longer like this or going stale. It was going like this. It's because of that depreciation in your reimbursement mode. Another thing that happened was with the cost report. We got the cost report stuff done, and we sent it off to Marty Michaels, who does the cost report for us. And for many reasons, we had more volume, but the expenses didn't go up for the amount of volume, so cost per care per day went down. So we ended up owing Medicare $208,000. That had to be paid with the Medicare cost report by November 30th, or they would quit paying us completely. So we had to get a check for them and send it off to Medicare, which strapped us pretty low. We're working on things and we're trying to get there. At this point, the cash flow statement and everything that shows where all the cash in the bank is through the end of November. Since that, we've got $169,000 from Medicare and we got $140,000 from the city for the grant. And there's $44,000 that haven't been posted that, you know, will go there. But Friday is payroll and that's $150,000. At the first of every month, we have to pay Blue Cross, which is $100,000 or better. There's certain bills you have to pay. We didn't pay any payables last month, other than the ones that we absolutely have to pay. We have to pay the insurances, we have to pay for the travelers, the traveling nurses and stuff that are there, because if you don't pay, they pull them out, and then we don't have enough people to operate. And we have to pay for our drugs every 15 days, or they will quit shipping drugs. And that's between $10,000 and $15,000. The payables are a lot better than I thought they would be. Today, they're only $310,000. I figured they'd be up closer to five, but they're $310,000. That pretty much tells you today, as of today, the receivables are $4,281,000. They are down a little. They were, when I came back, I believe they were about $449,000, something like that. November has just finished. November was not a good month. I think they've just finished the posting for the deposits and the charges. I think they're ready to run the statements. They hopefully will have them at the end of the month. But I think the gross charges were only something like $690,000 or something like that, and they're usually $700,000 or $800,000 or $900,000. So it's going to be not, and then you've got the $208,000 that Medicare was paid in there too. So that's going to be.
I have a question.
At
this time, can you tell me how many months reserve operating capital does the hospital have?
None.
What's the average for a hospital normally maintain?
The auditors like you to have 6 months. We've never had 6 months. We usually had 2 or 3 months. Because there's no way for you to come up with extra monies since you're paid cost on most everything. But right now, we have none.
Okay.
Today, when Mary Jo gave me this stuff, she had in the general fund $252,000. And in the money market fund, where the Medicare money goes, there was $30,000. So that's $280,000 and a payroll of $150,000 due on Friday. Better than we were last week when we had to write the check for $2,000. But you know, you need to be aware that it's out there and what we're doing to work on.
Well, do you see any brightness in the future?
We'll get through it. We've done it before. It's going to take a lot of watching what we're doing, keeping track of things. It, you know, we're just going to have to do that. But we've done it before. I mean, it can happen. We just have to keep plugging away one day at a time, which we need to go here.
Anyone else have any questions for Olinda?
Well, I don't know who's going to answer, who's the right person to answer. But my question is, what does this do to credit ratings and stuff if we're really going to pursue the new hospital? Does this hurt us in some way? Is it going to make it cost more, or how is this going to impact?
So, as Olinda said, there was this period of about 3 or 4 months that the books weren't closed.
So, while I was concerned about how things were progressing, I didn't really have a good way to assess that then. And so, as soon as we knew, which was about, you know, a little bit after the CFO had left, so I didn't have him there to really help me assess the situation. But it was very, very concerning to me. And then the auditors came and we got more information from them. Olinda was there to help. And I asked Eric Campbell, he's a partner with BDO, is this going to completely rule out any chances of us trying for the hospital now? At this point in time, he said, I don't think so. So I do think what we have to do is get our handle on the cash flow. And as Olinda said, we've got some action plans in place for that. But I don't know that. I don't know for sure the answer to your question, but we're certainly not going to give up our effort to pursue it. That I can tell you. There were a couple other things, if I could just add, and then this might generate some more questions. But there's one of the reasons that it's difficult for small hospitals to operate anywhere, but and we are definitely having hard times right now. When I first came here, another CEO that I know that had just gone to a small hospital in Washington, they had one day of cash reserves, which meant that they had enough to operate for one day if nothing, no more income came in. We're in pretty serious situation right now, but we do have a lot of things in terms of, you know, what's this bright spot. We do have a very dedicated staff. We have very dedicated physicians, and people really desire to work hard to row in the same direction so that we can keep the, you know, the patient care delivery going forward, continue our quality care, and continue to care for each other as caregivers and to protect the assets of the organization. That's what we'll continue to do. But there are some things that make it harder, that have made it harder year after year after year. And each year that goes by, I think it escalates even exponentially, if you will, because we have more expenses to keep the building going because every year it's older. Every year we have more pipes break. Every year we have more electrical problems, and those things are very expensive. We also have, just like every other business in today's world, and especially in healthcare, we have an aging population. So more of our employees have long commitment and loyalty to the hospital, have worked there very many years. They have a lot of PTO accrued, and when they take time off, a lot of them need to be covered by someone else. So in order to maintain these, you know, long-time, faithful, and very knowledgeable employees, you do need to have additional FTEs in order to cover those folks when they take their deserved time off. And so we have had an increase in demand for our long-term care services. Right now we've got 3 or 4 people on a waiting list to get in. So I do feel that if we can get things stabilized and continue to bring down the receivables and also really cut our costs to the extent that we can without causing too much disruption, that we'll be moving in the right direction.
You had a question, Judy?
Yeah, I was just, the Medicare reimbursable thing sounds like a nightmare, but I was curious about, I think it was in July when the hospital budget came before us, and there were some questions to be asked, but there wasn't anyone from behalf of the hospital, so Jeff took those questions and then we received some replies. And one of the questions was, what's in the reserve? And I believe the response was around 900,000, if I remember the email. So I'm just curious, though, that we went from 900,000 in July in reserves to not very much now. Mm-hmm. And is that an accurate picture, or am I not? Or was something else happening? Or?
No, that's pretty, I don't know if it was 900 then. I know a couple days before the end of the year, they got the $598,000 from Medicare for the electronic medical record. And so the balance as of the end of the year looked a lot better than it was, even though it basically all went out because they had a lot of accounts payable that they couldn't pay at the time. And when they got that, they paid them. But basically, the final, basically, straw was the 208 we had to send back to Medicare. We have got back 200 and some thousand dollars from Medicare probably the last 5 to 8 years, mm-hmm. anywhere from 100 to 250,000. And so we had no way of knowing or anticipating that we wouldn't get it back. Basically, what happens is Medicare pays you on an estimate of what they feel your costs are going to be for the year, and they're based on the prior year. In the middle of the year, they rework that estimate, and they determined that we had been underestimated and that they were going to owe us money, so they sent us $140,000 because they thought it would be under, And it wasn't under because of, you know, the increased revenue and everything that we had, and the expenses didn't go up at the same ratio, so the cost per day and per patient went down. And so that's what, you know, kind of put it into owing money. But it's been years and years since we've had to pay Medicare back, and so we just didn't expect it.
And I was very puzzled by that, because when they make their payment based on their assessment, and they were making it every month like they do, but then when we got that mid-year adjustment, that signaled to me that they had underestimated and they were making a correction. So I was stunned when at the end we had this big amount that we had to pay. And I asked Marty Michaels, our cost report preparer, how is it that we didn't see that coming in the mid-year adjustment? Why didn't they see that then? And he said that the way that they calculate the mid-year adjustment in no way, shape, or form reflects what you would do in your cost report settlement. He wasn't actually able to explain to me how they come up with the number, but he said that's how it works. Sometimes they'll give you money back, they'll take it away, but it doesn't, it's not consistent with the kind of adjustment you would make if you did the thoughtful, careful calculations that you do based on the reality that happened at the end of the year.
I believe Steve Prezonko, who's on the telephone, had a question for you. Can you hear okay, Steve?
You bet. Can you hear me, Mayor Jeff?
Yeah.
Go ahead with your question.
Thank you. Belinda, what is the acceptable reserve amount, or what was you, when you were full-time CFO, what was your goal for a reserve amount for the hospital?
Well, we tried to put as much away as we could. When we had $2 or $3 million sitting there, we felt it was pretty comfortable because we knew it wasn't 6 months. It was a couple months, but we could pretty much handle anything that came through without any delay or any problem. Now it's every day, well, are we going to have enough for payroll? You know, how many of the expenses can we pay? It just puts you on that level, and you have to be that much more diligent and watch it closer. You know, it'd be really nice if we had a nest egg there, but it's gone.
And you know? And I would add to that, and Steve, I would add to that that when at the time when I came, there was more reserve in the bank, but we didn't have the nest egg like Olinda described. Mm-hmm. That was gone. So we were able to comfortably pay our bills and feel that we had a little wiggle room, but it really has never been. We haven't had that strength in the last 2 years that you would like to have. And I think that's just, it is what it is.
So, Olinda, when you left, there was no reserves left?
Well, there was $2 million, $5 or $3 million when I left in all the funds, in all the bank accounts.
Okay. So there was a cash balance of $2.5 million. Mm-hmm. All right. My next question is there a standard within the state for hospitals to operate with the reserve of 6 months? I know at AICS, our goal was 6 months initially. We bumped to 8. I think they may even be further along than that now. But I haven't been to a board meeting in a while. Is there a standard? And the reason I ask that question is, when you're dealing with Medicaid and Medicare, and I've dealt with Medicaid, never Medicare, these sort of clawbacks is always a continual risk. And whether it's delay in billing or recuperation or high receivables, and I just have to believe that a hospital would have to have better reserves or access to capital in order to make ends meet.
Well, like I say, the auditors would like us to have 6 months. In most businesses, you know, in an accountant will tell you to have a year to a year and a half in reserves, but in a hospital, they said that's just way too much. And for years they have talked about 6 months, and we've usually had 2 or 3 months in our bank account.
Okay, and then my last question is this. If I remember correctly, when we were talking about a hospital previously, we were talking about a mortgage in excess of $20 million, I think closer around 24. And of course, we don't know yet what those times would look like. But I also believe that I was told at one point that the mortgage payment would be in excess of $150,000 a month. for that type of facility. And I'm just curious, as we're proceeding along, in the last 2 years, Marla, you're reporting that you've been unable to grow the capital account, the reserve or cash accounts. We're having more and more difficulty collecting, and it's getting harder and harder for small hospitals to make ends meet. I guess my question is, why are we still talking about a new hospital and not just looking at how we're going to make this one work if that's the case, if things are getting more and more dire?
So, great question, and might need a little help from Melinda, but one thing that goes against us a lot right now is that our building is pretty much totally depreciated. It's also not a very attractive facility anymore. It's not very functional. And given that we still have a waiting list, it tells me that if we had a good, solid, nice, healing environment, that we could potentially be a destination for people that are in other nearby communities that would want to have their loved one here or be here themselves. We would have a lot of depreciation if we had a brand new building. And I think that we because we're cost-based, and you'll have to back me up on this because I'm not sure, Olinda, mm-hmm. but while the cost would be high, a lot of it would be interest, and I believe that the majority of that would be reimbursable. So I do think that's why people have hope for having a hospital like this in a situation like we're in. And I share your caution. And there would be a ton of due diligence, and believe me, we won't be loaned money if the lender doesn't feel that it's going to be a good investment. But I think it's definitely still worth pursuing. The other thing I would say is, in terms of what the mortgage might be, as we continue to build our collaboration with AICS and we see opportunities where we can share space that already exists in their new building, it may be that we can create a very good facility that will serve us for many, many years. For potentially less cost than what was originally projected, but that would certainly be our aim, but still serve the community far into the future. So those are the kinds of things that we think about that give me hope and make me think that it's almost an imperative that we do pursue it. I just feel that the healthcare delivery system in Wrangell, which consists primarily of our public health nursing services, the Wrangell Medical Center and AICS and a few other things are pretty strong economic drivers, probably equal to about 25% of the payroll. So it's really important that we do what we can as a community to uphold and sustain the businesses that we have that serve the community's health needs.
And we will have to have probably 18 months worth of payments on a loan set aside when we go into that project until we can start getting it through our reimbursement to go through and get it back from Medicare and Medicaid. That's just the way it will. It will take the first year and a half of you making payments before they go on the first year, then they go on the cost report. The year ends on June 30th. The cost report isn't due until November 30th. And then Medicare doesn't give your new rates to you and give you any money that you need until February. So you have to be able to operate for that length of time until the reimbursement starts.
Any further questions?
So the first 18 months, is that, do you recover that, or you just...
Then your rate is high enough that the costs for interest and depreciation and everything are in the rate. So you will be collecting those throughout the year. So you're going to be collecting more than what you would have ordinarily, and that will then pay for itself. Okay. And I think it was when the studies were done, I think it was about year 3 or 4, where then your cash flow starts really climbing, and by the time you're up to 7 or 8, you've like 3 or 4-fold your cash of what you put in the building or what you've got back through reimbursement. I'd have to go see if I could find the study, but that's the way that works because of the reimbursement.
Anything further? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And I want to say, if you have any questions, don't hesitate to give them to Jeff. I think that was the plan, is if you guys have questions that you want answers for, give them to Jeff, and he'll send them to us, and you know, we'll get them back as quickly as we can.
Right, and Jeff talked about that we might come once a month to bring you an update, if you like, and ideally it would be best if it was at just after our hospital board meeting, so that they're, you know, hearing it first from us, if you will, but whatever would work. But we would like to definitely keep all of you informed about what's going on.
We'd appreciate it.
Thank you.
Borough clerk's report. Oh, you have more on your...
Not much more, but...
excuse me.
The public works director position closed yesterday, the application period. And so we have a selection committee that will be meeting tomorrow, and we'll start through that process. So anyway, we hope to be able to hire someone in the near future so they can work as long with Carl as he's here. So we're working on that. I will miss the next meeting. I'll be on vacation in someplace warm, so.
That's not allowed.
We've got a fair amount of projects. We've got our coming up this next year, the pump stations for the sewer pump stations. That project should be construction this year, or 2015. Evergreen, as you probably heard, has been delayed, which was a huge surprise to us, but it is. The Shoemaker Bay float design, Carl's been working on the RFP for that, to get that out to advertise for engineers to submit proposals on that for design. And we have, Greg's actually got a kind of a plan. The state, you can apply to the state for matching money, and the port's got so much in their reserve, and we're looking at some options to come up with our half, so that, because it's going to be about a $10 million project. So we're kind of working on some things there. The city dock, we purchased a lot of materials here a while back, and they're working on the bid to get that out, to have the fender pile in the front of the dock replaced. And then we believe, depending on what the bids come in, there'll be some additional money that we'll spend down there. Possibly some new lights, maybe some other things that the Port Commission would like to do down there. So that will be happening. Caziar, the paving is pretty much done. There's some cleanup and some other things that can't be done until spring, grass seed and some of that. But at least they have pavement now, that I'm sure they're all happy about that. The Marine Center, they're using the paving there. Several other things going on. One other project that the assembly approved here a while back was the court remodel. The design is getting very close to put that out to bid, so there will be some work there inside here hopefully this winter for somebody. And the finance department, our accounting system that we have that we bought in 1996, they are in the process of no longer supporting that, probably in another 2 or 3 years, and so we'll be working on replacing that before it completely fails. So other than that, that's about it.
Any questions?
Oh, on the Evergreen project, is there anything we can do about that?
We had a similar experience with Front Street, and it probably was 2 years later than I think we thought it should have been. We heard last, in fact, Peggy had asked me that she thought it was going to be done in 2014. We talked to them. They said, oh no, it's going to be construction in 2015, and they've been working on the design for a fair amount of time. So we thought it would be going out to bid here sometime, you know, late this fall or about now. And here just a while back, Carl was actually talking to the chief guy there that's doing this, and he said, no, we've got to do this and this and this. It won't be out till bid till next September. So, and by that time, you know, I don't know if a contractor's going to crank up in September to do any work like, you know, paving kind of work.
Probably
so,
not.
So it's probably going to be the spring of 2016.
Okay. Borough clerk's report.
Other than what's in my report, I don't.
Item 10, Mayor Assembly Reports and Appointments. Does any assembly member have any report?
Nope.
Well, we have one appointment to fill the vacancy on the Parks and
Mayor.
Recreation Board. Oh, you have something now?
Well, I had a question, maybe a request, I guess. I was wondering if on our next agenda we could put our discussion of the policy about whether to have electronic packets and some kind of device so we don't have to have stacks of paper all over my house. Anyway, I'd like to put it on the agenda.
You'd like to get that on the agenda? Go
ahead. Thank you.
Anything else? Okay, I want to fill a vacancy on the Parks and Recreation Board. As most of you are aware, the Grover Mathis had resigned, then he had withdrew his resignation, and then again had resigned, and in the meantime, we had asked for, solicited for people to fill that vacancy, and anyway, we had received a letter from Holly Owens at that time. Grover never did take his oath of office, what it amounts to. So the other person that had, Holly Owens, had turned in a letter. So I'm just going to go ahead and appoint her to the board, unless Assembly has a problem with that.
Okay.